Welcome, Eagles, to another episode of Tradcat Night Radio. I'm Eric Ajewski, founder and owner of Tradcat Night, your one-stop website for all of the day's latest church apostasy and end-time news. Now, Tradcat Night is featured all over the alternative media circuit, and I'm doing my best to keep you up to date on all of the latest happenings as we head closer to the fruition of the Third Secret of Fatima. My good friends, please subscribe and click the notification button right now on YouTube. And in the event, folks, that we do go down on YouTube, we see a lot of censorship these days, I want to encourage you all to check out Tradcat Night across the plethora of platforms that we are on now. My talks and articles are featured on Veterans Today, Minds.com, PewTube, BitChute. We are also now on iTunes and Google Play, SoundCloud.com. And now if you, from your phone, you can check out these talks and podcast format on player.fm. And of course, the sister site, tradcatnight.org, houses all of these shows and the live shows as well, which we're doing now on the weekend, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Folks, if you have a special guest that you'd like to see on the radio program, please contact me at apostleofmary@hotmail.com. And folks, we got another great one for you today for this April the 10th, 2018. I have a first-time guest, so this is going to be, wow, we're really going to get into some topics that we don't necessarily like to talk about. But as many of you know, I have a background in kind of breaking free from sexual addiction, porn addiction. And we've got a really great guest today to where Joseph and I can kind of go back and forth and share our own experiences in breaking free. So today I have Joseph Sciambra, who was born in 1969, Northern California, not far from San Francisco. He grew up in a stable and loving home while attending Catholic parochial schools from kindergarten through the 12th grade. Early on, the dark shadow of pornography would cloud his entire childhood and teenage years. Now, throughout the 1990s, Joseph lived around the homosexual culture of the Castro district, offering him rare insight into the daily lives and struggles of many gay men. Later, he became an amateur porn actor and escort in 1999. Following a near-death experience, Joseph returned to Jesus Christ and the church. Now, since then, he has written extensively concerning the real-life issues of pornography, homosexuality, and the occult. And in terms of education, he has received a BA from the University of Cal at Berkeley in art history, and he has an MA from Sonoma State. Joseph, thank you for taking time out today on this April the 10th. Why don't you tell us, as a foundation for this talk, a little bit more about your background and story and how, you know, you got out of that, what, I don't know what you want to call it, pit. You know, your book, I mean, goodness, we could even talk about your book here later, Swallowed by Satan. So much to discuss today. Talk a little bit more about your background story, Joe.
Yeah, thanks, Eric, for letting me be on your program. Like the little bio that you read says, I was raised, I would say marginally Catholic, what we would call like a cultural Catholic. I went all through Catholic parochial school for 12 years. But this was during the 70s and 80s. I graduated from Catholic high school in 1988. And at that time, unfortunately, things haven't changed as much as I would like, but they were very much teaching the primacy of the conscience. And we were told to follow our own, you know, personal voice, which I guess isn't bad advice. But if your conscience is not formed, right, then there's a real problem. So, I grew up a very confused kid. I was very alienated from men. I was, you know, distant from my father and, you know, all men around me, you know, male peers at school. And, I got into porn at a very young age, and, that didn't help because I was already a confused kid about my sexuality. And as I got older, especially in the late 70s into the early 80s, especially before the AIDS crisis, pop culture very much started to explore homosexuality in a very very positive light. So I was believing at that time that I was gay, and because of what I was taught, in Catholic schools, is it in terms of the primacy of the conscience, I believe that, well, and this is the way that it was sort of presented to me in school, is that, the church does teach certain things, but if it doesn't conform to our own conscience, then, we're not obliged to follow
Frightening, huh?
them.
Sounds like Francis might have been teaching at your school.
So the Christian Brothers. Well, I did that. So I believe that, I had been born gay, and I did have a priest tell me that, I had been born gay. That was the way that God made me, and so on and forth. So, and that God did have a plan for me within the homosexual. It sounds so absurd today. Had a plan for me within the homosexual context, and that was to, be with one guy, ideally. So that's what I did, and I went to San Francisco in 1988, and this is really the height. You couldn't have picked a worse time to come out as gay. To be 18, I was almost 19, and go to San Francisco and be gay. It was just the height of the AIDS crisis, and in terms of infections and deaths and everything. And but I had such a difficult childhood, and I had been so lonely that I was willing to take the risk, and I still see it today. Things are not much better. People aren't dying of AIDS in the numbers like they were back then, but there's other issues, and a lot of young men and women get to gay or go to gay after at be they're at a loss already. So, I went to San Francisco that way as a pretty damaged kid. And when you show up there, and I half expected the Castro, the gay neighborhood in San Francisco, to be like something out of Night of the Living Dead, where there would be gay men walking around like zombies. I wasn't sure because AIDS was so much in the media. And but I still wanted to go, and it wasn't as bad as I thought. I mean, the ravages of AIDS were still there, but I encountered, especially as an 18, 19-year-old young man that was, marginally good looking, and I was thin. You're gonna find a lot of men, older men, that are very willing. I never felt like I had a father figure in my life, and at least an affirming and compassionate one. And when you show up, when someone like me, and this still goes on today, you show up in like a gay neighborhood like that, you're going to find a lot of men that are willing to be your father. And of course, that comes at a price, and it's sex. So, it's the homosexual lifestyle in many ways mirrors our porn addictions. When you start looking at porn, you tend to be rather sort of pedestrian in your taste. Like when I was a young kid, I looked at Playboy, which is would be considered very would be considered I don't think it would be considered pornography nowadays, but
Scary, yeah.
no, I mean the Kardashian sisters do more than what
Right.
the young ladies in Playboy did in the
Yeah,
70s.
that's true.
But as you look at more porn, your inhibitions drop, and you become more comfortable with looking at more hardcore stuff. I mean, I remember when, I mean, this was the pre-internet. I remember first just sort of accidentally seeing like more sort of hardcore porn, like saying like Hustler magazine or something, and being sort of, you know, reviled by it, and sort of just this instinctual response. But you, I mean, it's not for long, and then that stuff is not exciting to you. And I mean, in the gay world, because it's so sex saturated and it's so fast, it's like, you know, wham, 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 you know, it's just so quick. You know, when I, especially because I was worried about contracting HIV, you know, I was cautious about what I did, but then you start doing more and then you start doing more. And especially in gay culture, which, I mean, our own secular culture, straight culture, is pretty sex saturated, but it's like on, you know, it's like the gay culture is that on steroids. I mean, because you can just walk down Castro Street and they have all the naked pictures of men everywhere, and it's pretty insane and it's pretty intense. So
don't they have those walks now, Joseph? I thought I remember reporting on in the past year or so in the San Francisco area where they actually just do like topless or nude walks out there. I think it was San Francisco. I could be wrong. Maybe it was Seattle, or I know it was some liberal town.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, Eric, I mean, I outreach, this is a whole other story, but I outreach to like Gay Pride, Folsom Street Fair, Dory Alley Street Fair, you know, Leather Walk, you know, all these different things that they have in San Francisco. And people, I mean, it's gone beyond, but it used to be like this in the 90s too, but a little less in your face. But I mean, people actually have sex on the public streets in San Francisco.
Goodness. Yeah. Wow. So what was the deciding moment for you? What was the epiphany, the turning point for you to say, hey, I gotta start climbing out of this rabbit hole? Because I agree with you in terms of my own background. Yeah, it's like, you know, you're doing soft stuff, then you start getting into harder and harder stuff, and then, oh my goodness, today, Joseph, as you know, I mean, some of the pornography is just outrageous with all the violence and stuff. I mean, it's now like there's like a merger between just being outlandishly violent and trying to merge that with sexual intercourse, and it's getting more bizarre, I guess, to say the least. And you know, it is a checkout from reality. People turn to either pills or alcohol. Some people check out of reality by you know, dabbling into porn. So what was the turning point for you?
Well, you know, life just got unsustainable for me. You know, I was sort of given a choice to live or die. And at that point, this was in 1999, and I was 29 years old. And so I'd spent over a decade as a gay man. And I just felt that, you know, I was ready to die. I certainly wasn't contemplating returning to Catholicism, right, or Christianity by any means. I mean, I had disregarded it long, long time ago. It wasn't even in the back of my mind. But for some reason, our Lord Jesus Christ in all his mercy took pity on me, and, you know, the hopeless, you know, wreck that I was. And I just hadn't felt any love from anyone in so long. And I just, at the moment of death, you know, our Lord Jesus Christ just reached out to me, and I said, you know, yes. So that was it. I didn't know what I was saying yes to. I assumed that I was just saying yes to being alive. And I felt that he was offering me a way out, and I took it. So
Now, in your book, Joseph, Swallowed by Satan, if you could give us a little bit more of your testimony. I'll speak for myself first. I was, with sexual sin, per se, for me, it's the quickest way to contract, you know, an unclean or demonic spirit. And at a certain point, I was aware of something else living inside of me, and it wasn't the good spirit. So, you know, talk a little bit more about your, you know, your book a little bit. If you had any other, you know, experiences where maybe Jesus presented your soul like, hey, you know, it's really time to it's really time to break free from this. I mean, I you know, I get the hairs to stand up on the back of my head when I think about some of the, you know, the stories that I could tell. I want to get your, you know, your experiences now.
Yeah, well, LGBT people are just like, any other. And I'm not labeling those that identify that way, but that's the way they identify. But they're just like anyone else, and I think humans have an instinctual desire for the transcendent. I mean, to know that there's something just beyond me and this. And so but in gay culture, it goes in a lot of weird places. It's always sex bound, and I mean, I couldn't figure this out when I was there, because like when you're in the middle of something, or like when you're in a cult, you don't actually like know you're in a cult. You just think it's normal. So, within gay culture, a lot of sex takes on a certain sort of like strange sort of simulacrum or mockery of I mean, what I see is like Christian ritual. Especially like at the Folsom Street Fair, I mean, you see people seeing like tied up and whipped. It's a weird sort of like martyrdom. If you, it's very, and I don't mean to be sacrilegious, but in sort of imagery, in a way, it sort of mirrors the martyrdom of the saints. But there, it's so hollow and it's so shallow,
Right.
and it leaves people very empty. And like you said, it does open up a big space in terms of spiritual or demonic infestation, obsession, possession. Because I got into the headspace where, you're being abused, whether it's through, bondage or sadomasochism, or, even with just what people would consider like vanilla gay sex or something. It's a tough, it's a tough, especially for men. I mean, it's a tough thing to get involved with. It's painful, despite what. Well, you don't hear it in the media. They don't really talk about it. But, men are not, I hate to be crude, but men are not designed to be receptive. And when you get into all of the gay sex,
Right.
just things start happening. And it happened to me very, very quickly. And but I didn't understand it at the time. And there's a whole other sort of corollary in gay culture where they're very interested in the new age, and I got into that too, because they're very suspicious of Christianity in general, or any really type of organized religion. And I just woke up one day and I knew that things are not good, and but I couldn't turn it around. I just so you just kind of go deeper, and I didn't feel like I had anywhere to go, so.
Yeah, that's it's sad. And over the course of doing my outreach, my ministry, I actually have had a handful, not it's not very often that this happens, but a handful of those who are battling with the sin of homosexuality, and they know it's wrong. And we live in a society now, Joseph, this culture of death, I call it the culture of self. We're dealing with homosexuality, we're dealing with contraception, we're dealing with porn as a part of this. It's an overall attack on the traditional family, as Sister Lucia warned. And ultimately, with pornography as it relates to the culture of self, is an attempt to please self as opposed to pleasing God and pleasing your partner in the proper context. Talk a little bit more of, this culture of self that we're living in, because obviously your website, by the way, I didn't mention that. I apologize. JosephChiambra.com. He also has a YouTube page by the same name, and also a Twitter account. I'll get it in the description box for you, so you can just click on it and directly hook up with Joseph's material. But the culture of self is just all around us, and I know that's what you're keeping up on your website.
Like I said, a lot of people, men and young men and women, go to gay at a loss, and they think they're going to find fulfillment there. They think, you know, whatever trauma took place in their childhood, sometimes it's not as dramatic as, say, like physical abuse or molestation or something like that. It can be just like a lingering neglect that they experienced, or pornography. And they think, I mean, a lot of people go to gay with good intentions, but they're not going to find the fulfillment that they're seeking. They're not going to find it there. It's just one deception after another. But you still think it's there. But see, we have a whole other huge, huge problem now, is that the whole LGBT phenomena has been linked to identity. And unfortunately, a lot of people in the Catholic Church has jumped on this. And in terms of gay, the way the identity thing is really confirmed for a lot of people is through this whole born gay narrative. And if you want to look at like the Lady Gaga song, where it really, you know, picked up steam in terms of, you know, born this way, it's where people feel that, you know, in homosexuality and in homosexual activity is their only route to fulfillment, because that's the way that they were born. And according to some people, like Father James Martin, that's the way God created you to be gay. So it's part of yourself, it's part of your identity, it's part of who you are. You know, even worse, it's part of the way God intended you to be. So, you know, if that's what you believe, I mean, it's not a matter of choice. It's not like saying, well, what other choice do they have? You know, they believe that they're doing what they have to do, or what even God has compelled them to do. So that's very tough to talk to people about, because it's going against the self. I mean, it's so, that was not as pronounced when I came out, because you still had people. I mean, this was the age of Madonna, the singer, when she was very much sort of experimenting with bisexuality. So it was a little more fluid back then, where people were, you know, gay, and then they were bisexual, or they were lesbian or something. Now it's with this whole born gay thing. It's very, very difficult to navigate, and it's tough. Oof.
Yeah, and so we've had our friend Father James Martin saying some saints were probably gay, you know, born gay or whatever his position is now. I mean, I don't know. I've been on record as saying I think this guy's a Masonic plant. That's just my personal opinion. But, you know, I had Brittany De La Mora on the show last year. Her stage name in the porn industry was Jenna Presley, and we had a great talk about what you just talked about in terms of the neglect and the abuse. I wanted to ask you this question, because I don't obviously spend time, as much time in the area that you spend with, as it relates to helping those with same-sex attraction. Do most homosexual men find that because they are rejected by women, they'll dabble or go into homosexuality? You know, I want to get your take, and I'm not necessarily talking about you per se, but just in general, with the people you talk to or worked with.
No, Eric, it's the opposite. It's because they've been accepted by women and rejected by men. It's the absolute opposite. I
Interesting.
mean, yes, most gay guys had very good relationships with their mothers, their sisters, with girls at school. I mean, I was one of them. We all have the same story where we become kind of the token gay friend for a group of girls. It's especially cool nowadays. I mean, when I was in the 70s and it was 80s, I think some girls' sort of maternal instinct kind of kicked in, and they recognized this sort of outcast, which I was, that was being picked on by other boys. Now it's very, you know, it's very hip to
Right.
have a gay boyfriend, you know, for a girl. And you know, those circles are very toxic, because I know what they're like. Because, It strengthens the perception in the pre-homosexual boy of other males as the other, you know, because you're with girls and we're talking about boys and we're looking at boys, and it's really bad. And so gay men have not been rejected by women. They've been rejected by men, either their fathers or their brothers or other boys at school. And a lot of people look at this sort of analysis as Freudian, but and they reject it. But hey, I don't have any background in any kind of psychology.
Sure.
But you know, I've got, you know, I go to the University of the Streets in San Francisco.
Exactly.
And I mean, and I've talked to thousands, and I've known thousands of gay guys, and the stories are strikingly familiar. Now, there's always differences, and there's always, you know, not all everybody's the same, but it's always alienation from masculinity, from fathers, from men, that sets up you know, a desire to be with men in an attempt to heal those wounds, because you feel like if you have sex with other men, that is some sort of somehow resolving all of that. And it's a absolute deception of the devil, because it does the opposite. It doesn't resolve anything. It, if anything, it just makes it worse.
Right. And, yeah, no question about it. We're living in a society which is trying to normalize sex. Our Lady of Fatima warned about immodest fashions coming onto the scene. We obviously have seen that. Of course, homosexuality, but pedophilia as well, all preparing the way and the platform for the man of lawlessness, in my opinion. I wanted to get your take on this, and I think you did a short video on this on your YouTube channel, as it relates to kind of the Days of Lot news that we're seeing on a daily basis. In layman's terms, why is sodomy so important to Satan?
Well,
we could probably talk about this for 2 hours, but you got to you got to do your best to do it in about 5 minutes, Joe.
Well, it's a, you know, it's a perversion of the marital act. You know, I mean, it's,
yes,
it's very basic. I didn't know anything about natural law when I was a gay guy, and I didn't know anything about natural law after 12 years of Catholic education that my parents paid for, you know. But again, I learned it through experience, and I learned it the difficult way, which is, you know, when I got out of gay, I don't know, when you're in gay, I don't know, things kind of go fairly well, I guess, because you're always on medication and,
right.
And you're, I mean, pharmaceuticals, I don't mean like drug, but well, they do that too. But, and you're with other people and you're all going to the same, to be blunt, proctologist, and you sort of, you know, you kind of figured, well, this is the way it is. But when I got out of gay and everything just started falling apart, and, you know, I did go to some physicians outside of San Francisco who were less, let's say, less familiar with the unique problems of gay men. And I had to have a lot of work done. I had to have all this surgery because I was using my body in a way that it was not designed to do. And then I had to pay the price. I mean, I didn't pay the price like some guys did, which was death, because they died of AIDS. And, you know, it's sick because, you know, a beautiful sex between a married man and woman, you know, can bring forth life. You know, sex between two men, about the only thing it can bring forth is death, you know, and it's the opposite of everything, you know. And
yeah, well, I have with me today Joseph Sciambra, author of the book Swallowed by Satan, and we're going to jump ahead a little bit here, Joseph, and talk a little bit about some current events here on your website. Again, josephsciambra.com. You broke a story within the past week talking about this Jesuit University of San Francisco, holding its annual drag ball, and they're giving advice on genital tucking, ladies and gentlemen. And let's hope we don't see that in some conciliar catechism down the road. But why don't you break this story down for us, and maybe we'll move through some other headlines here.
Oh, man. You know, so I've never been particularly interested in the transgender or drag phenomenon because it's not my experience. Although I pray for those people, God bless them.
Sure.
But I did start, I don't know how I did. Well, I've always been interested in the University of San Francisco. I had some, I try to put it delicately. I had some contact with priests from USF when I was there in the 90s. That's a Jesuit university. And I just had noticed that they have this annual drag ball, and it's at USF. And all this information is widely available on social media. It's not like anybody is sort of using word of mouth or keeping this on the down low or on the hush hush or anything. It's all there for everybody to read. And they had this last year. They had a tutorial for people before the drag, and it was about tucking and binding, which it's very sad because it's all about how people conceal their birth sex gender in order to put on drag outfits, and it's insane. I mean, this is a Catholic unquote university, and right. this is accompaniment. This is a sort of accompaniment that they're talking about, teaching people how to tuck. It's madness. And I don't fault these people that are involved with this, these LGBT, transgender, whatever, these people involved with this. I fault the school because the school is the one that's facilitating this and giving them the forum. And now I know that if the school didn't provide this venue for this event, they would go somewhere else.
Sure.
But at least it wouldn't be happening under the guise of Catholicism.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible, terrible example to these people. And again, and I talked about this with families, what kind of out are you giving somebody in the gay life if you buy into all of this? And this is what the church is doing. If these people want any kind of alternative to the life that they're living one day, if they start to question it, I don't know, maybe they won't. But if they do, I mean, shouldn't they have an alternative? And they don't have one.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, Father Malachi Martin, long before his death, warned that the New World Order and basically, since Vatican II, the conciliars would try to normalize sodomy, homosexuality in general. Now, you broke another story. It was probably a few weeks ago or a little bit longer than that even, concerning this Donald Godfrey. And correct me if I'm wrong, I believe he was a Jesuit as well. Now, he was holding an LGBT retreat in which he said, just imagine Jesus as gay. So my question for you, Joseph, is this truly trying to help people, get out of the rabbit hole, so to speak, and gain a hold of themselves spiritually, if you will, staying in a state of grace? Or is this just another event? I hate to call it an event, but to just normalize sodomy. I mean, what is this? Is there an agenda here? Or are they really trying to help people?
Well, Donald Godfrey is also at USF, the university. He's a Jesuit. He's also, whenever I go down these strange rabbit holes, I always find a Jesuit. And,
it's not shocking, Joseph.
No. Unfortunately, this is endemic to this issue, is that the priests that are interested and are involved in LGBT outreach are ones that volunteer for it and are usually chosen by either their religious orders or by a local bishop. Those are the priests that absolutely should not be involved with it. And the reason I say that is because they're usually very conflicted individuals, and I've met a lot of them. And they either have some sort of personal issue with the church, and they're using the gay community as a weapon to get back at the church. Now, the apostolate courage is a whole different story, so I don't want to say anything against those priests that are involved with courage. That's completely different. But here I'm talking about LGBT outreaches that are particular to like a university like USF or Georgetown, or what's another one, Loyola Marymount in LA, that have very, you know, large outreaches, or ones that are located at a parish, like out at St. Paul in New York City, or Most Holy Redeemer in San Francisco, or the LGBT outreach in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Those are very, very toxic, because you have very facilitating priests that are involved, and then you have lay, I don't know, for lack of a better word, ministers who are usually either married in a same-sex marriage or very openly, you know, homosexual. And it's a Trojan horse that's just been rolled into the church. And unfortunately, a lot of, because some conservative or traditional Catholics will say, you know, this is kind of a weird, like, fringe of Catholicism that, you know, we don't really need to worry about. It's never really going to go anywhere. Well, you know, they've been saying that for like 30 years. But, you know, over the process, and the Catholic media has kind of ignored it, and Catholic laity kind of either doesn't care or don't know, that these many of these operatives have risen within certain archdioceses, and also have gained the ear of cardinals within the church, and they've had an influence, and you see it. So yeah.
Yeah, no question about it. Our Lord said we are to deny ourselves, folks, and whether you're straight or gay, you got to learn to gain mastery over yourself, utilizing God's grace. God will never give you a trial, a tribulation, a storm, if you will, that you cannot overcome through his grace. And so we've got to continue to pray for people who are, you know, are in that world, so to speak. And now you've had the very fortunate opportunity to be able to go outside of the Catholic world per se and talk with people all over, truly. And now one of the talks I found this morning, if you will, was this interview with Howard Stern. I would first like to know how this came about. How did the talk go? You know, was he trying to troll you? Was he, you know, you just bring on a show to like make a mockery of you? Was he really interested in hearing your perspective? I mean, what was your experience there?
Well, I think I was just kind of the comic foil, but you know, I knew that going into it. So this was in 2013. Gosh, it was a long time ago. And I had been involved with this ministry. I couldn't get any like Catholics really interested. I couldn't get anybody like in the mainstream Catholic media interested. And I wrote my book, and I think Gawker is now defunct, but I think Gawker did a whole thing on my book. And I don't know, just Howard Stern had picked it up, and the producers called, and when I was involved with porn, because he used to have all the porn stars on. So right. In the 90s, I listened to him, you know, not regularly, but quite a bit. So I kind of knew like his shtick. So when I went, I was like, you know, that's cool, because if I can just get my message through a little bit, and I was willing to make myself into a fool, you know.
Well, your intentions were pure, yeah.
To do that, so I mean, it's no big deal. So I mean, he was very nice off audio, you know. He's a little, it's like a character he's playing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, I was just about to ask if he was just playing like a WWF character or whatever.
Yeah,
but as long as you got the message across, I mean, I did a similar interview with David Pakman last year. You know, going into it, I knew he was going to troll me. And but yeah, to get the message out, you know, my intentions were pure and got to get it out there. Now, you reported upon late March, too, as well as we did, this Holy Cross theology professor saying that Jesus was a drag queen, drag king, excuse me. And, you know, these are just some of the headlines that we are seeing. I'm not sure if you even saw this one, Joseph. Someone actually sent it to me. It came from an Italian source. Transgender homosexual catechism covers Salesian's fathers. Did you see that one? Because it came out, I think, within the last 3 days. If you haven't seen it, you can get to my blog, tradcatnight.blogspot.com. It's about the fifth article down. But yeah, take a look at the picture where it shows a couple, two guys, a quote unquote couple, with two children, and they're obviously pushing that agenda. So it's moving into the other orders. It's not just the Jesuits, folks. We could provide, you know, dozens of examples other orders being affected. What else is on your radar? What's hot on your radar before we let you go? We do have to get going here in a minute. You know, what else would you like to talk about before I allow some what I call shameless self-promotion time?
I my hope and prayers is that the Catholic, because I don't believe that this issue will, just like the gay priest child sex abuse scandal, I don't think the Catholic hierarchy will address it in any way until it actually blows up. It's just they seem to wait until things are out of control. And it seems like with the whole gay issue in the church, it's pretty much to that point. So the laity just have to, they just have to make an impact with their feet in terms of just walking out of these parishes, like St. Paul the Apostle in New York City, or St. Monica's in Santa Monica, or Most Holy Redeemer in San Francisco. They just need to walk out, and they need to make an impact with their pocketbook and just not give money to these dioceses anymore until they clean this up. Because, gay people, deserve all the respect that anybody deserves. And what they deserve is to know the truth. And in these parishes and in these ministries, they're not getting it. They're being deceived. And that is not fair. And those bishops are not doing their job. They're not doing it at all.
Well, there you have it, folks. I appreciate you taking your time, out of your busy schedule, Joseph, to come onto the program today. And as I just mentioned, if you've got any upcoming articles, media appearances, projects you're working on, anything you'd like to get out in terms of some shameless self-promotion, I'll close out the program.
Thank you. I am preparing a second edition of my book. The first edition, a lot of people, and I took those criticisms to heart. They did say that it was a bit too descriptive and a bit too explicit. So I am revising it, and I should have it, I'm hoping by this summer, I'll have it published and ready for people to read. So all I have to do is go to my website, josephchambre.com, and I have a blog, and it'll be all there when it's ready to be purchased. And
great. Well, we thank you for taking time out today, Joseph.
Hey, thank you, Eric. God bless you.
Thank you for tuning in to Tradcat Night Radio today, folks. Check into tradcatnight.blogspot.com. It's updated daily. And this information war, folks, if you could get behind me, not only with your prayers, but with your financial support, that would be greatly appreciated. Click that PayPal button along the right-hand side of the website. And please do donate financially. I've got another great guest tomorrow. We're booked solidly for the next month. We've got another great one guest this Saturday that many of you have been calling for, and it's going to be another blockbuster talk. And again, the live weekend call-in shows are now readily available, not on my YouTube page, but also on the sister site. And we go live on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern time. Folks, listen, continue to keep Joseph and I in prayer. Let's keep our wings spread as an eagle in faith and hope. And until next time, stay safe and God bless.